ever thought about the truth? This program is based on the book Ever Thought About the Truth by Harun Yahya. Have you ever thought about who you are and what the purpose of your life in the world is? Who has created you? Who has created the perfect body that you possess? Who has created all other people and the entire universe? What is His purpose in creating all this and what He wants from you? Most people spend their lives without thinking over these questions in any serious way. Their heads are rather full of such issues as what they will be having for dinner in the evening, exchange rates, worries about their future, and similar. Yet all these issues which occupy their minds will become meaningless in a very few decades with the inevitability of death. And one's eternal life, which will begin with his death, will be determined according to the answers one gives to these questions. So, everyone should know that the answers to these questions are more important than any other issue that now seems so very important. What is expected from those who listen to this cassette is that they will re-evaluate a very important aspect of their lives. But in this process, they will have to keep their prejudices and those standards which they have so far accepted as absolute in abeyance. When one approaches any given situation with prejudice, one is no longer able to make a healthy decision. As a matter of fact, when one wants to see something as right, one sees it as right. One perceives a thing as evil, since one has already decided beforehand that it is so. The telling point about these prejudices and presuppositions is that they are rarely formed by the individual himself. From the beginning of his life, he is burdened with the countless prejudices that society instills in him. Family, friends, and close relations determine his value judgments. One who readily accepts these prejudices instilled by society loses a great part of his personality. He acts under the influence of conditioning by others and does not behave with a free will or mind. He can thus accept only the values that are shown to be true as true. However, when we consider that different societies with different cultural backgrounds happen to believe in different rights and wrongs, we can see that there is not much sense in following the dictates of any given society without questioning its value judgments. What we must stress is that cogitating independently upon society's conditioning is conduct which betokens wisdom in the thinker. Religion, especially today, is one of the most important subjects about which countless prejudices are produced by society. The influence at least of some part of the media has formed many prejudices about religion, which are hard to overcome. As a result of these prejudices in our societies, religion has become a concept which most people either do not consider important or prefer to stay away from as far as possible. People who fit this definition cannot be said, however, to have adopted such an attitude consciously. For them, religion is an irrelevant subject that is of no benefit to them. Besides, it places some restrictions upon them. One having such a point of view would claim, when asked, that he is a Muslim, although religion may be one of the less important matters of his life and one of the subjects of which he is quite ignorant. Indeed, such a person would never have given any serious thought to religion, not even for once in his life. He would probably never have thought seriously about the question, why does the concept of religion exist? For him, religion is a matter that generally concerns aged people, that presents some ethical values, but mostly entails many boring, tedious prohibitions and restrictions. He practices some of the religious rituals on religious holidays and festivals and on some important days, but he finds only a few of these formal rituals right and necessary and consider certain others as ancient and outdated. Although he usually does not deny religion, he tries, as we have mentioned before, to keep away from it as far as possible. This wrong perception of religion originates from accepting presuppositions imposed by some part of society without subjecting them to independent scrutiny. In the Quran, the ultimate ethical guidebook, the importance of thinking and receiving admonitions is emphasized in many verses as follows. Say, "To whom does the earth belong, and everyone in it, if you have any knowledge?" They will say, "To Allah." Say, "So will you not pay heed?" Surah 23, verse 84 to 85. In another verse regarding thinking and remembering, it is stated, "We have made the Quran easy to understand and remember, but is there any rememberer there?" Surah 54, verse 17. Those who cannot think about religion independently of society's conditioning will make two great mistakes. The first of these is not being aware of the real purpose of religion, and therefore, as a result of trying to avoid religion, not being aware of Allah. The second fault is supposing that religion exists to drag people to an awkward and bigoted position full of pressures, and to impose duties on people which go against their very nature. Once the individual rectifies the first mistake and starts becoming acquainted with the Creator and the Creator's attributes, he also rids himself of the superstitions that keep him away from religion. The correction of the first fault brings him a sharpness of mind and a sensitivity, which in turn helps him to correct the second fault as well. Then, religion becomes a concept not to be avoided, but to be learned in detail. In short, the society we live in has formed countless prejudices about religion. However, in approaching religion, the basic criterion must be its original references, like the Quran, and not people's sayings about it. In the Quran, it has been indicated that following the common run of the people does not necessarily lead us to Allah's way. If you obeyed most of those on earth, they would lead you away from the way of Allah. They follow nothing but conjecture. They do nothing but lie. Surah 6, verse 116. When a person stops following the herd and begins to think with his soul, he personally sees the reality emphasized in the Quranic verse cited above. He steps into a new world, which is quite different from that of the common run of the people. This step will drive away from him the darkness, distress, and troubles of his old life and bring to him the countless graces and the deep wisdom of religion. At this point, however, let us remind you that the word religion refers to Islam alone, as it is stated in Surah Al-Imran, verse 19, "The only true faith in Allah's sight is Islam." Anyone who decides to learn about Islam needs first to understand the existence of Allah. If he does not believe in Allah, he will simply be investigating the Quran and Muslims in terms of his own limited vision of life. We can clarify this with an example. Some sociologists who do research in religion may write volumes of books dealing with how religion has come about or its influence on society. Yet, in spite of these academic works, these people cannot understand religion or reach the essence of it to even a thousandth of the extent a person who lives by religion does. That is because these people have not grasped the fact of the unity of Allah, which is the essence of religion. The Quran expresses disapproval of such people. They have denied something which their knowledge does not embrace, and the meaning of which has not yet reached them. Surah Yunus, verse 39. Islam is not an ideology or a collection of beliefs which can be evaluated by superficial examination. The individual can understand what Islam is about only when he understands the existence of Allah and lives his life as enjoined in the Quran. Essentially, the existence of Allah and the reality that there is no deity other than Allah are crystal clear facts. But in the society of ignorance, where people fail to use their reasoning due to their habit of indifference and indolence, they grow blind and cannot comprehend this reality. As a matter of fact, that is the reason why they are stigmatized as a society of ignorance. Now, let's give a brief example which can help us enrich our views. Let's assume that everything in our memory, including the knowledge of our self-being and our body, has been wiped out. If we find ourselves on a place like Earth, the situation we are in would undoubtedly be very amazing and astonishing. The first thing we would notice would probably be our body. Since we would sense that our body is something that is different than what we call I, it would be very interesting for us to be able to make it do what we wanted it to do. We would probably try to figure out the use of our arm by moving it up and down for a while. We would find very suitable surroundings for our body. There would be safe ground to stand on, a clear image to view, beautiful fragrances to smell, various animals, a proper air temperature exactly suitable to the body, an atmosphere suitable for breathing, and thousands of other sensitive balances. Edible fruits to satisfy our hunger, pure and clear water to cool our parched throat, and many more things. In a place like this, would we just go and enjoy ourselves, or be wise enough to ask ourselves some very crucial questions? Would we try to understand who we are, what the reason for our existence was, what the reason for the existence of the present order was? Would not the first question come to our minds be as follows? Who am I? Who has created me? Who has created this perfect body of mine? Who has created this great order which surrounds me? What does He, who created everything, want from me? What does He want to show me? Even an individual with a weak mind would think that there is nothing more important than finding answers to these questions. Someone who pays no attention to them, preferring rather to spend his life in fulfilling his physical needs, amusing himself during the day, and sleeping at nights, would undoubtedly be a creature of no understanding at all. Someone must have created his body and his surroundings. Once we were created, every second of the rest of our lives must also have been dependent on that superior being. What could be more important than knowing about this superior being, who obviously possesses a great power? Let us continue with our example and assume that we reach a city after walking through the land for a while. There are various types of people there, most of whom are pretty vulgar, ambitious, and insincere. And almost nobody is thinking about his owner or the place he is living in. Although everyone has a job, an aim, or an ideology, the people of the city cannot bring good order to the city with which everyone would be content. Let's assume we meet some people whom the denizens of the city dislike, and towards whom they feel rage and enmity. As to what these people are like, we see that they are significantly different from the others in many ways. We feel that, as human beings, they are amiable, reasonable, and trustworthy. They look humble and they speak in a clear, moderate, and sensible manner. Let's assume we start a conversation with them and they tell us, "We have a different view of life and think differently from other people because we are aware that there is an owner of this place and us and all other people, including you. We are also aware that His power is above everything, and He has created this place and everything else to test and educate us until the day comes when we will leave this place. We have a book which we have received from Him, and we are leading our lives in accordance with this book." In such a situation, we might not be 100% sure whether these people were really telling the truth or not. But we would probably understand that there was nothing more important than listening to them, especially obtaining further information about the book they were talking about, would we not? The only thing that stops us from being as sensible as the person in this example is our having been on this earth for a longer period of time. In fact, if we think deeper, we see that there is not much difference between one's being in a growth process instead of coming into being on earth all of a sudden. Consequently, people have come to the earth out of their own will, and all the conditions necessary for their survival have already been created for them in advance. In such a situation, the most important thing to do is to search exclusively for the truth, to listen to those who claim they have knowledge and evidence about the truth, and then to think over what we have been told. Or the other option would be to simply pretend not to see all of this and to prefer to be involved with such ordinary, everyday questions as, "What shall I wear tonight?" and "What shall I say to this or that person?" that are daily repeated and will one day become meaningless when death comes. Which one of these two choices is the more rational, logical, and conscientious? Reminding man of his creation in the Quran, Allah guides man in this way. Does man think that he will be left uncontrolled without purpose? Was he not a drop of sperm emitted in lowly form? Then he became a leech-like clot. Then Allah made and fashioned him in due proportion. And of him he made two sexes, male and female. Is he who does this not able to give life to the dead? Surah 75, verse 36 through 40. What do you know about the Quran? Most people would give this answer to this question. The Quran is the holy book of Islam. This is surely correct. However, the Quran is primarily a book that Allah has sent down to all people and held them responsible for. So, people need to know everything about its content and its commands, advice, and judgments. Yet, many people know very little about the content of the Quran. In fact, the Quran is used for many purposes which are far removed from its true revealed purpose. It is usually hung on the walls of houses with a decorative cover and read usually by elder people from time to time. People read it in Arabic, but as they only know how to read Arabic letters without understanding the meaning, most of the time they have no idea what they have been reading about, so have no grasp of the content of the Quran. According to such superstitions, the Quran is also supposed to afford some very interesting benefits to people. After reading it and performing some weird rituals like breathing hard on another person's face, the readers and his close relatives are believed to be protected from a possible future accident or misfortune. The Quran is credited with being some sort of amulet that includes talismanic words which protect people against bad luck. Many people believe some traditions to have their origin in the Quran. Then what is the true nature of the Quran? The answer must be derived from the Quran itself. Here is a message from mankind. Let them take warning from it, and let them know that He is one Allah. Let people of intelligence take heed. Surah 14, verse 52. This verse and many others emphasize that the real purpose of the revelation of the Quran is to encourage people to ponder on such crucial issues as the creation and purpose of life, to make them know about Allah who has created them, and to guide them to the right way. The Quran is a book that is addressed to people with an open mind and soul. Yet, what is needed in the first place for people to take warning is to correct a mistaken point of view regarding the Quran. The Quran is not a book which is addressed only to people who lived in a certain age, but to all people who consider themselves Muslims. Any person who says, "I believe in Allah," must read the Quran and try to understand the meaning of the verses. Allah emphasizes the importance of this in Surah 73, verse 4, which says, "Recite the Quran distinctly." it is inevitable that countless superstitions will be introduced into religion. Unless people follow this command of Allah and learn the verses of the Quran as is due. Of course, learning the Quran is only an introductory step, since application should follow it. Some people are satisfied just with reading the Quran and think that they have fulfilled their religious duties by doing so. However, it is not only a matter of learning what is in the Quran, but also putting it into practice, applying the Quran to one's own everyday life. As stated in the verse, "I only created jinn and man to worship me." Allah has created all people on the earth to worship Him. He sent down the Quran as a guide for those who want to worship Him. It is a book we have sent down to you, full of blessing. So let people of intelligence ponder its signs and take heed. Surah 38, verse 29. Those who claim that the Quran needs to be revised to be in accordance with this new age cannot grasp the fact that the Quran covers all ages and societies. When anyone reads the Quran with a sincere heart and an open mind, he sees that the models of people and societies described in the Quran existed in every age in history, including that of today. All the disorder, perversion, and mistakes of a society which has strayed from true religious values have been clearly stated in the Quran. The reactions of the people of these societies towards religion have been described with detailed character analyses. These descriptions and analyses are relevant in all respects to the world of today, thus demonstrating that the Quran is above and over all temporal constraints. What is interesting here is that such inconsistent views as society is in a state of continuous progress, whereas religion is static, have also been diagnosed in the Quran as arising from a deficiency of comprehension. It is informed in the Quran that unbelievers who live thousands of years also interpreted religion as tales of the ancients. Surah 16, verse 24. When an individual starts reading the Quran and tries to implement it in his daily life, he can be considered to be on his way to becoming a real Muslim. With amazement, he begins to see how the Quran covers every moment of his life. It is impossible to imagine that true religion can exist wherever the Quran is abandoned. Therefore, a very clear distinction must be made between the religion of the Quran and those traditions which are wrongly considered to be a part of true religion. The concept of religion requires special attention. Religion, that is, Islam, is purely and simply the implementation of the Quran. Whatever religion is considered to be nothing but a series of traditions handed down from the time of our forefathers is certainly not Islam. Today, many people consider themselves religious, although they do not know much about the Quran. This shows us how the situation has deteriorated. Religion may continue to be a heritage from our forefathers, but trying to perpetuate such heritage has no value in the sight of Allah. In many societies, where people are either Buddhists, Jewish, or idolaters who live in an African clan and worship totems, they do what they do simply as a matter of tradition. Therefore, none of their practices amounts to true religion. For most of the people following one of those religions, the aim is not to seek the pleasure of Allah, but to try to live in conformity with society, satisfying their nostalgia by keeping their traditions alive and driving some personal interest from their religion. Most people have developed a concept of religion not by looking at its original sources, but by looking at their forefathers, so that their impressions about religion are, in fact, impressions about tradition. As for tradition, it has a very large repertoire. This repertoire includes many meaningless superstitions, invented stories about saints, false sayings, and practices attributed to the prophets and the saints. unreasonable explanations of supernatural events, all of which are thought of as amounting to true religion. In fact, many people who learn these traditions from their family and the society they live in realize that these traditions stand on slippery ground and are full of countless sophistries. But because they do not want to put themselves out to search for the truth and the true nature of the religion, these people either choose to accept religion the way it is, or as mentioned in the beginning, stay away from it as far as possible. As a matter of fact, the very existence of those sophistries attributed to the true religion paved the way for justifying their escape from religion. However, religion should be the most important topic for a Muslim. He should know how to distinguish true religion from other systems and should take as a duty the quest for the correct form of religion. Let's turn back to our example given in the beginning. We had mentioned a group of people in the city who were very different from the others in every way, and towards whom all other city dwellers had a hostile attitude. We had explained, moreover, that this group of people had a book which had been conveyed to them by the owner of that city and everything else as a guide. These people are called the believers in the Quran. However, what we witness is that these people are not well liked by the other people in the city. We had mentioned that the society of this city was a society of ignorance. But it does not mean that this society is irreligious. On the contrary, people of the society of ignorance consider themselves very religious people. However, the religion that they are associated with is not the true religion. It is a religion of tradition, a religion full of baseless and even perverted beliefs and practices which have their roots in the religion of their fathers. They think they follow the right religion and try to keep it alive with insistence. The Quran alludes to this characteristic in the following verse. When they are told to follow the revelation that Allah has sent down, they say, "No, we shall follow the ways that we found our fathers following." What? Even if it is Satan beckoning them to the penalty of the blazing fire. Surah 31, verse 21. One of the most important characteristics of a society of ignorance is that its members defend their tradition in the name of Allah. As a matter of fact, this is an insincere defense, for they actually do not measure Allah with His true measure. But they, especially the leaders and the leading groups of the town, never stop praising Allah. There is also such a group in the society of ignorance who know the Quran and promise to follow its religion, but who prefer the vanities of this world and turn away from religion. In spite of all this hypocrisy, they represent themselves as perfect Muslims. This group is mentioned in the Quran's Surah Araf, verse 169, as follows. After them succeeded an evil generation. They inherited the book, but they chose for themselves the vanities of this world, saying, "Everything will be forgiven us." And if similar vanities came their way, they would again indulge in them. Was not the covenant of the book taken from them, that they would not ascribe to Allah anything but the truth? And they have studied what is in the book, but best for the righteous is the home in the hereafter. Will you not understand? In such a case, it takes more careful observation to understand if an individual or a group of people is truly Muslim or not. Because, as is clearly stated in the above verse, talking non-stop about religion does not necessarily show that the speaker is a real Muslim believer. In many verses in the Quran, it is openly mentioned that there are people who don't believe, although they say they are believers. Of the people, there are some who say, "We believe in Allah and the Last Day," but they do not really believe. They think they deceive Allah and those who believe, but they only deceive themselves and do not realize. In their hearts is a disease, and Allah has increased their disease. They will have a painful punishment on account of their denial. Surah 2, verse 8 through 10. Other verses warn us that when these counterfeit religious people are asked certain questions, they answer by using the words of a believer. Say, who is it that sustains you in life from the sky and from the earth? Who is it that has power over hearing and sight? And who is it that brings out the living from the dead and the dead from the living? Who is it that rules and regulates all affairs? They will soon reply, Allah. Say, will you not then do your duty to Him? That is Allah, your Lord, the truth. And what is there after truth except misguidance? How then are you turned away? Surah 10, verse 31 to 32. Islam has a single principle, worshipping only Allah. In Islam, the realization of this principle in life should be paramount. All other things not based on this principle are not Islam, but some form of religion of ignorance. This reality, expressed with such brevity, actually has a deeper meaning, much deeper, in fact, than many people imagine. The members of the Society of Ignorance already consider themselves believers and think of themselves as not worshipping anything other than Allah. Because they surely do not worship a statue while they are praying, then they imagine they have the right to think that they are worshipping only Allah. However, the reality is quite other. This misapprehension arises from the fact that worshipping is understood only as prostrating oneself in front of a being that is to be served. However, the real meaning of worshipping should be derived from the Quran. Allah informs in the Quran that He has created man to worship Him. It is certain that a believer is one who fits this definition, serves Allah alone, and does nothing but worship Him. So, if a believer is one who does nothing but worship Allah, then, with the understanding of the society of ignorance, should we conclude that a believer must stay in a position of self-prostration until the end of his life? Can this be the case? Of course not. How to serve Allah and how to worship Him is described to us in Surah An'am. Say, truly my prayer and my service of sacrifice, my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of all the worlds. Surah 6, verse 162. As this verse indicates, the principle of worshipping Allah is not confined to praying, but overarches all of life and also death. A Muslim is one who spends all of his life in the way of Allah. As a result of this, he shall earn the good pleasure of Allah, His mercy, and everlasting gardens in the hereafter. Then, how should the believer worship Allah? How should he live his life in Allah's way? Should he adopt a motionless, stable way of life as a withdrawn person? No. He is to live his life according to the model described in the Quran, not according to the definition of the religion concocted by the ignorant. Since he knows he is not obliged to show himself as a religious person to others, he will not experience the distress of fulfilling the requirements of a false definition of the religious, which is not from the Quran. He lives for Allah only, works only for Him. He misses no opportunity to use his capabilities in Allah's cause. This is not a way which is full of difficulties, or which deprives the individual of all the pleasures of life, contrary to the belief of most people who do not know anything about Islam. Indeed, one who worships Allah is the most independent, the most peaceful, happy, and cheerful. Once rid of all the false deities which enslaved him, such questions as, what do people think about me? What can I do if that person does not like me? What happens if I get fired? No longer trouble him. He dedicates himself to the only Lord, the Mighty, the Wise, the Knower of all things, the Compassionate, the Merciful and Powerful Allah. As is stated in Surah Baqarah, verse 256, He has grasped indeed the firmest hand to hold. The Muslim has an intimate and close connection with Allah. Allah is his only comrade, helper, and Lord. One of the most important characteristics of a believer is his avoidance of arrogance and haughtiness. Therefore, he knows he needs to seek refuge with Allah. He makes the effort to attain the believer model as described in the Quran. A believer will fight against all the obstacles he encounters in Allah's cause. The biggest obstacle is the greediness and low desires of his soul, in other words, his own self. All through his life, he will oppose his own self whenever it offers alternatives which are against Allah's will. His own self will try to lead him astray by the use of countless tricks and obstacles such as fear, hopelessness, and slackness. However, a believer will overcome all of this through his eagerness, affection, determination, courage, and patience. He does not struggle only for himself. He fights with wisdom against those transgressors who oppress people, tyrannize over them, or try to prevent them from treading the path of Allah. In Quranic terms, he will bring Allah's salvation and justice to those men, women, and children who, being weak, are ill-treated and oppressed. Another characteristic of believers is that they enjoin the right and forbid the wrong. A believer shoulders the mission of inviting people to Allah's religion. For this reason, Allah has stated in Surah Al-Imran, verse 110, "You are the best nation ever to be produced before mankind. You enjoin the right, forbid the wrong." One of the salient characteristics of a believer, which makes him different from the fake devotee, is that when he delivers the Quranic message to people, he does not expect to gain anything from it. His goal is not earning money, wealth, and position, but the pleasure of Allah. He looks for his reward only on the path of Allah. The true believer is on an exalted plane of morality. He has an easygoing, tolerant, forgiving personality. Since he is not unduly swayed by events, he shows a mature reaction and behaves with wisdom, keeping his feelings well under control. He wards off evil with good. He is self-sacrificing, helpful, and kind. He does not bear false witness, and he passes by worthless talk with dignity. These are some of the characteristics of believers that are pointed out in various verses of the Quran. Allah has described this moral perfection in His book in detail. Of course, the believer will make mistakes. After all, he is a human being. What separates a believer from other people is that as soon as he realizes his mistakes, he will correct them and pray Allah to forgive his faults. He is a man of understanding. He trusts in Allah. Because he puts his trust in Him, he is saved from fears, anxiety, and sorrows of our worldly affairs. Since he is an open-minded person, he can think big, and he can easily fathom the complex sides of events. His reason has been enforced by wisdom and knowledge. He is a caliph on earth who bears aloft the spirit of Allah. During this short period, he will be tested and educated. Then he will be ready for his real home in the hereafter. His life in this world is full of glory and honor as a caliph of Allah. No one can overcome him or divert him from the path of Allah. Because he has made a favorable bargain in the beginning and sold his self, wealth, and everything he owns to Allah. The excellent result of this bargain is stated in the Quran as follows. Allah has bought from the believers their selves and their wealth in return for the garden. They fight in the way of Allah and they kill and are killed. It is a promise binding on him in the Old Testament, the Gospel, and the Quran, and who is truer to his contract than Allah? Rejoice then in the bargain you have made. That is the great victory. Surah 9, verse 111. So far, we have mentioned the characteristics of the believers whom Allah is pleased with and whom He allows into heaven. But what about us? Have we ever asked ourselves how much we resemble them? The model of the believer as described in the Quran shows us that simply saying, "I am a Muslim," and performing some simple acts of worship may not be enough in the eyes of Allah. The Quran explains the position of those serving Allah on the verge of true faith as follows. There are among men some who serve Allah, as it were, on the verge of true faith. If good fortune befalls them, they are well content. But if an ordeal befalls them, they turn upon their heels. They lose both this world and the hereafter. That is a loss for all to see. Surah 22, verse 11. Obviously, it would be quite meaningless to deceive ourselves by such thoughts as, "My heart is pure, I do not have any bad habits, and I do not do any evil to anyone. Undoubtedly, Allah loves me." Allah wants people to serve Him, and not just be a pure-hearted person who does not do any harm to anyone. Besides, no one can have a pure heart without true faith. After making this reminder, it will be useful to discuss the model of a person living in a society distant from religion. One of the most important characteristics of a person who fits into this model is his behaving in accordance with the conditioning of that society. All his manners are acquired by following the majority. This will also shape his point of view about religion. All his religious thoughts are shaped by his environment. He has few opinions on the Quran, and maybe he has not read it even once in his life. Therefore, his only source of information about Islam and Muslims is the baseless practices of his grandparents and stories about Islam which are just hearsay. At school, if his biology teacher is an evolutionist, or if his philosophy teacher is an atheist, he begins to think that he has found the truth and gone beyond the simple matters of life. Through the systematic, discriminatory propaganda of certain circles portraying believers as aggressive, fanatical, primitive, passive, and isolated people, he thinks he has acquired an adequate knowledge of Islam. False, distorted, unreasonable religious practices he sees around him, which in no way reflect the real Islam, do not lead him to search for the truth. He does not bother to find out if there is actually a real religion. He does not want to accept the onus of discovering the reality. He thinks that his escaping from thinking will free him from his responsibilities. The situation of such people, who are in such a psychological state, is described in the Quran in this way. They keep others from it and avoid it themselves. They are only destroying themselves, but they are not aware of it. Surah 6, verse 26. The irreligious attitude of the society in which this person lives is his biggest support. The irreligious way of life adopted by members of high society, politicians, writers, and other famous and important persons who are mostly known to be enlightened intellectuals affects him deeply. After all, high society must go by the most appropriate norms of behavior, and he should be in conformity with the society he is living in. By keeping away from religion, he thinks he becomes a modern and contemporary person. Under the influence of this group psychology, he thinks he escapes from the worry of what will happen to him in the hereafter. Being an irreligious person might make him feel guilty, but he comforts himself by thinking that there are many other people who share this guilt with him, as if this reduced the seriousness of his guilt. He thinks, committing an offense as a group reduces individual responsibility. But when he dies, he will be all alone. No one will be with him when he shall have to account for his actions. There won't be any help from those famous enlightened people and members of high society or millions of other people. The situation of these people in the hereafter is described in the verses as follows. And behold, you have come to us bare and alone, as we created you for the first time. You have left behind you all the favors which we bestowed on you. We do not see with you your intercessors whom you thought to be partners in your affairs. So now all relations between you have been cut off, and your fancies have left you in the lurch. Surah 6, verse 94. Since he misunderstands the meaning of the concept of being elect, he takes wrong persons as models for himself. According to the Society of Ignorance, to be an elect person, some special qualifications are required, like possessing wealth and fame. But being an elect person can be achieved only by being a pious believer who has been brought near to Allah. Actually, the irreligious way of life introduced as modernism is not an independent philosophy at all. It is a thought system which is promoted to destroy religious values and to establish a social system in opposition to them. It has the effect of preventing people from carrying out their religious duties. The rules of this thought system apply not only to specific subjects, but also to many aspects of life. The system either attempts to destroy certain concepts like chastity and loyalty, or distort the meaning of others, incorporating them in its own system in order to mislead people. Characteristics like honesty, courage, and being brave in the way of Allah are some of those virtues which are highly praised in the Quran. Fighting against the unjust, determination to the extent of sacrificing one's life in the way of Allah, fearing nothing but Allah, are also among the most important characteristics of the believers. But this system describes courage as indulging in the most extreme perversions, honesty as engaging openly in immoral activities, and determination as being firm in maintaining and promoting these perversions until death. The society the individual lives in forms his value judgment and shapes his thoughts and feelings to such an extent that he eventually gives no thought to the purpose of life, his existence, religion, and Allah. Since the system imposes countless duties upon him, he has, in any case, no time to think on such issues. First of all, he needs to be the captain who saves his ship, thus earning his status in society. In order to reach this goal, he shall have to manipulate and abuse people. But once things do not work out as he plans and he fails in his attempt to gain some status in society, the mentality he favored so far turns out to be a threat to his existence. He finds himself in the ranks of those upon whom he used to look down. The criteria he expected would lead him to be honored now turns against him. His so-called friends disappear. He is left desolate and all alone. He can find no one to trust and no one to help him. When he feels he is totally desperate, he asks for help from Allah as a last resort. This attitude of the society of ignorance is explained in a verse by the following example. It is he who enables them to traverse the land and the sea. They embark and set sail with a favorable wind, at which they rejoice. Then comes a stormy wind, and the waves come to them from all sides, and they think they are being overwhelmed. They pray to Allah with all fervor, saying, "If you deliver us from this, we shall truly show our gratitude." Surah 10, verse 22. But as soon as Allah answers his prayers and things start to go well for him, he again turns away from Allah, as if he was not the one who desperately asked for. In the subsequent verse of Surah Yunus, this mentality is mentioned as well. But when he delivers them, behold, they transgress insolently throughout the earth without any right to do so. O mankind, your insolence is against your own souls. Take your enjoyment of the life of the present, but in the end, to us you will return, and we will show you the truth of all that you did. Surah 10, verse 23. As the verse reveals, a man of ignorance turns towards Allah only when he encounters a difficulty. But once Allah saves him, he continues his former ungrateful attitude. During the rest of his life, he will be tested and he will encounter similar troubles again. But unless he learns his lesson and chooses the right path, those will only cause his deviance to become more ingrained. The worst of all is if his life ends before he sees the warning in these tests and carries out his duties to Allah, then it will be too late. Because he has been given enough chances and he has already proven what kind of a person he has been during his lifetime. The regret such people will feel when they face this reality is stated in the Quran as follows. If only you could see when they are standing before the fire and saying, "Oh, if only we could be sent back again, we would not deny the signs of our Lord, and we would be among the believers." Surah 6, verse 27 to 28. In other verses of the Quran, the unbelievers' similar position is emphasized, and they are advised to turn to Allah during their lifetime in this world. Respond to your Lord before a day comes from Allah which cannot be turned back. On that day you will have no hiding place and no means of denial. Surah 42, verse 47. Every person throughout his life has a chance of getting rid of what society has instilled in him and turning to Allah's way. According to the law of Allah, no one will depart from this world before he is invited to the religion of Allah by a warner. Those who receive this invitation give different responses. The Quran explains their reaction in detail. The best of these reactions is stated in the Quran as follows. The reply of the believers when they are summoned to Allah and His messengers so that He can judge between them is to say, "We hear and we obey." They are the ones who are successful. Surah 24, verse 51. Nevertheless, not everybody's reaction is as ideal as this. The Quran also mentions those who deny their religion with pride and even hold Muslims as enemies when they are invited to accept what Allah has revealed. The soul of such individual tells him what is right and wrong. But another inner voice keeps on instilling in him the determination not to turn away from the irreligious society. He tries in several ways to escape from reality. Since he cannot say, "Believers are telling me the truth, but I do not accept and practice what they tell me to do because of my own weakness and pride," he tries to find faults in religion itself and in the believers. When such a person meets a true believer who is sincere towards Allah, he approaches him with suspicion and prejudice. When he sees that this believer is not of the traditional mold, he claims him to be a person who is interpreting religion according to his own desires and using religion for his own benefit. However, it should be borne in mind that such deviant evaluations have been made of all believers throughout history. Such accusations have even been directed at the prophets. In Surah Muminun, one of these accusations is mentioned in this way. The ruling circle of those of his people who disbelieved said, "This is nothing but a human being like yourselves who simply wants to gain superiority over you. If Allah had wanted, He would have sent angels down. We never heard of anything like this among our ancestors, the earlier peoples." Surah 23, verse 24. The ignorant person who wants to escape from the right path to which he has been invited puts forward cliched rationales such as, "So, everyone is doing wrong, and only you are doing right." However, this rationale is completely contrary to the Quran because according to the Quran, the truth is not measured by the number of people who believe it. That most people will not be on the right path is announced in the first verse of the Surah Ra'd, which says, "Most men do not believe." This kind of person tries to find deficiencies in the explanations of the real religion based on the Quran. Although he does not know much about the Quran, he enters into disputes and produces examples to defend his distorted logic. In fact, these examples, which are called comparisons by the Quran, are quite baseless and without consistency, and are put forward as a way of escape. In Surah Furqan, verse 9, it is said, "See how they make comparative judgments about you. They are misguided and cannot find the way." In Surah Hud, verse 19, on the other hand, such people are mentioned as those who would hinder men from the path of Allah and would seek in it something crooked. We are again informed by the Quran that those people who turn away from Islam, hiding behind primitive reactions, excuses and distortions, are described as wrongdoers and unjust. Who does greater wrong than one who invents a falsehood against Allah, even as he is being called to Islam? Allah does not guide those who do wrong. Surah 61, verse 7. In the society of ignorance, there is also a group of people who try to distort religion so that it will not conflict with their own interests. However, when they meet a sincere Muslim, they try to justify themselves in order to hide their feelings of guilt and inferiority complexes. The methods they use in doing this are usually the same. They start uttering clichés to prove how religious they are, such as, "All thanks be to Allah, I am a Muslim. My grandfather is a pilgrim. I never skip prayers at Eids." They are offended when they are advised on religious issues. Some shrewd people go a step further and act as if they were the most religious of all with using such statements like, "Allah knows who is on the right path." Surely Allah knows who are on the right path and who are not, but He guides us to the right path by stating in the Quran that being a true believer is only possible by being in possession of the characteristics of the believers as explained in the Quran. As the criteria of the Quran are very clear, he who claims superiority for himself without having any knowledge of the Quran does nothing but dishonor himself. One of the biggest errors of such people is that they wrongly assume that they can deceive others. However, real believers can easily diagnose such people with their understanding and the ability given them by Allah together with the knowledge provided by the Quran. Besides, Allah, who knows well all the secrets of the heart, sees them and knows them better than they do themselves. Such people believe that they can deceive Allah just as they deceive other people. On the Day of Judgment, no excuses from them will be accepted before Allah. Essentially, all attempts to seek in religion something crooked stem from a lack of understanding of the reality of the hereafter. As is stated in the Quran, Allah has created the world as a temporary home for us. It is for putting believers to the test, having them purified, letting them become worthy of heaven and bearing witness against the unbelievers. However, members of the society of ignorance disregard this reality and hold on to the world alone as if it will never end. According to this distorted mentality, which can be summarized with the statement, "We come to this world only once, death is the end," then man should enjoy his life while he is alive, and he can try anything for it. It is clear that death is an unavoidable end and that it will come sooner or later to everyone on earth. Yet, the ignorant disregard this fact and keep it out of the agenda as much as possible. They sedulously avoid thinking about it and prevent people from talking about it. Everybody leads his life as if he will never die, although most people do not deny the existence of Allah. When we look closer, we see that that is because of their lack of faith in the hereafter. In the verses, this psychological state is emphasized. As to these, they love the fleeting life, and put away behind them a day that will be hard. Surah 76, verse 27. However, when we pass away, we do not become lost in nothingness, but step into our real lives. It is very obvious to the thinking person that life in this world is temporary and simply a sample of the real life. All the beauties in the world are temporary and have many deficiencies. The most good-looking human being can keep his good appearance only for one or two decades. As he gets older and older, his physical appearance changes. His skin becomes puckered. His body loses its shape. It is not necessary to get older to witness the shortcomings of the life of this world. Our body mechanisms are built with many weaknesses. Since people are used to all this, they are usually not aware that these weaknesses have been given to them on purpose. But all these deficiencies are to remind people of the fact that they stand in need of Allah. They are also to remind people that the life of this world is only an example of the real life in the hereafter, which is free of all deficiencies. Then one may ask, what is the real life like? It is known to all that there will be two different abodes in the hereafter, one for the believers, paradise, and the other for the unbelievers, hell. However, the society of ignorance has not stopped short of producing tales about paradise and hell. Therefore, we again need to refer to the Quran to understand the true nature of the hereafter. The eternal home of the believers is paradise. Allah will reward them by leading them into the gardens, where they will dwell forever. Paradise is a place where believers will find whatever they want, and even more than what they want. In Surah Zukhruf, verse 71, Allah says, "There will be there all that your souls could desire, all that your eyes could delight in, and you shall abide therein forever." The eternal home of unbelievers, on the other hand, is hell. For as many beauties and blessings as there are in paradise, there is an equal amount of ugliness and torment in hell. Those who have denied Allah as their creator are punished endlessly in hell. Allah informs us about the torments of hell as follows. Hell lies in wait. A homecoming for the profligate, remaining in it for countless eons, not tasting any coolness there or any drink, except for boiling water and scalding pus, a fitting recompense. They did not expect to have a reckoning and utterly denied our signs. We have recorded all things in writing. So taste. We will increase you only in punishment. Surah 78, verse 21 through 30. What is intended here is to remind people that they will face the Day of Judgment and will render account before Allah, and that they can be saved from eternal punishment only if they turn to Allah before it is too late. This program is based on the book Ever Thought About the Truth by Harun Yahya.